Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Josh North, Ian Kundle here. Another Baseball America Prospect podcast. It's a big one today because if you go over to baseballamerica.com, check it out. We have an updated top 100 prospects ranking. And when I say updated, you know, we'll replace graduates and all. And we did do an update at the start of the minor league season, but I would say this is a much bigger update. We have started to see the graduations. We saw JJ Weatherholt graduate. When we're recording this, Kevin McGonigle hasn't graduated, but by the time you're watching this, he may have graduated. We know that Connor Griffin is graduating soon thereafter, and that's really important for this because we knew as we had our meeting to line up the top 100 that we need to prep for having a new number one. Sometimes maybe we'd say, go check it out over at Baseball America and see who's going to be the new number one, But Ian, I'll kind of start off with you. In this case, I don't feel like that anyone's going to be wondering too hard who's going to be the new number one. Did it feel like that Jesus Mate kind of like answered the question in a way that it's really not as much of a question as maybe it usually would be for a new number one?
Yeah, I think that was honestly one of the easiest decisions we had to make. We kind of telegraphed it in the offseason. I think, you know, if you look at his skinny, it talks about how probably the number one prospect in waiting, and he's done nothing to dissuade us of that opinion. So far this season, he's gone out in Double A as a 19-year-old. He's hitting .282 with a .375 on base and a .464 slug. He uncorked one of the most impressive throws of the season, reaching, I think it was just under triple digits, or might have hit 100 miles an hour.
Just going to interject one thing. He's 18 still. He is in his age 19 season, but he will not turn 19 until later this week. So 18 still, as we talk about
right now. Yes. And so he's 18 still. And the tools he's showing are it's just really impressive. And I think to me is when I go through my process of setting the list, I kind of look at it in tiers, and he's kind of in a tier of his own right now. Just the combination of arm strength, offensive ability, defense. We'll see if he stays at shorts, but even he's going to stay on the dirt. So somewhere in the infield, you know, this is the type of prospect that when you envision a number one overall prospect, he checks all those boxes.
Josh, you've been seeing Mate for as long as almost anyone. I guess Ben Badler probably saw him before you did, but on staff, you went and saw him in the DSL All-Star game. You've seen him every year since. And I would say that like he is a prospect. There are very few prospects over the years, but there are some players who you're trying to be conservative, but you can't help but just keep moving them up and up and up and up. He's kind of been on a rocket ship in our rankings basically since early in his first pro season, has he not?
Oh yeah. I mean, the DSL was super impressive. It was incredibly easy to put him as the number one overall prospect in that league 2 years ago. He didn't do much in that All-Star game when I saw him, a sweet 0-for-1. But
we used that video of that 0-for-1 so many times.
Well, we've also got other videos, but we shot him and he came to Zebulon, which RIP Zebulon. And he was impressive there. And I was a little surprised when he got promoted at that point, just because every time I saw him, he was rolling over to second base. But the Brewers were right, and he went on a tear at Wisconsin. And he's been, you know, bonkers at Double A Biloxi, which is a Southern League, which is typically a pitcher's league. But it's not a whole heck of a lot he doesn't do right now. I think he's a pretty easy choice for number one. But I think there are other candidates who could emerge later in the season if something should go wrong or one guy gets really hot. Like, I don't think he's without compare. I'll put it that way.
So before we get to those other candidates, the thing I think you mentioned it, Ian, he's 18, right? So I feel like sometimes now, again, by next week at this time, he'll be 19. But I do think that sometimes it's easy to kind of gloss over, like, okay, you know, but let's look at the season he's having and all this. And again, he's been really good. He's, as we're talking, he's .282, .375, .464. At Biloxi with almost as many walks as strikeouts, 13 stolen bases, 11 extra base hits as a switch hitter who's shown power from both sides of the plate. There's, again, it's a pretty impeccable resume. But I guess the other thing I would ask with that is like, when you add in the factor that he's 18, soon to be 19, and the other players in many cases, we are talking about players on the top 100. You know, you scroll through that top 100, there's a whole lot of 21, 22-year-olds who are a level or two below him. How much does that factor in him being our clear number one?
I mean, I think it has to. You know, you look at his combination of performance, his track record throughout the minors, where he's always been one of the youngest players at the level. I know you do that article every year.
Hey, he is the youngest everywhere he goes.
Exactly. And he's always the youngest. And he's probably going to be continue. And I think it just shows, you know, the Brewers have a track record of this. They did this with Jackson Chourio. They push guys aggressively who they think are that good. And I think, you know, with the way they've handled Mate, what Josh was talking about, you know, he in low A, if you look at his stats, they don't really jump off the page until you factor in his age. And then he goes up to high A and just crushes it. And since then, he's done nothing but hit. And yeah, so I think the age is a pretty big factor. But I think it's also just the combination of having the tools, the present ability he does already, let alone the projection. When you combine that with the age is what really separates things for me. Like, he's presently performing against much more advanced competition. The underlying data is very good. And when you add that all together and then factor in, oh yeah, he's still 18. You know, he's 3 years, even 4 years younger than some of the players on this list. It really, it's a separator for me.
By the way, speaking of that, if you do check out over at baseballamerica.com, we also have a four intriguing pieces, you know, data points from April. One of the things that stood out on that is how young the Brewers are overall. But when you say that, I think that Mate by himself being in Double A helps kind of pull that down just a little bit by himself, because he is that young.
To bring the point home about him being 18, if he's American, he's in this year's draft probably, or maybe it would be really fascinating to see how he would compare with Rock Chalowski for the race for the presumptive number one overall.
I don't think it's close.
It's hard to do just based on, we know he's already performing in Double A.
Right. But I would say, though, if I just said on a pure tools perspective, we have a switch hitter who I think is just a better hitter. Now, again, we're talking about college and a metal bat versus wood. It's a hard adjustment. But I think that when you like, that's why I brought up the 18. When someone's doing this at this age, it just gives you such, like, we saw this with Connor Griffin, obviously, who's also a baby who just turned 20 in the big leagues. Yep. And by the way, turned 20 and seems like, oh, now that I'm a 20-year-old, let me go out and mash, you know, for the worst week afterwards. But we see it over and over. And again, the best way I can put it is reaching the majors as a teenager or a 20-year-old does not guarantee you Hall of Fame status. However, the way I would put it is, but it gives you a much clearer path to that, because if you are able to perform and hold your own at the major leagues as a hitter, we should talk about this as hitters, not pitchers, at that age, your improvement that just players naturally have in your early 20s is being done at the major league level, as opposed to figuring out how to survive high A or Double A. And with that, like, when I look at Chalowski, very good prospect, but I don't know if he has, I would say that defensively he's better, but other than that, I would say as a hitter, I don't know if he has a real clear advantage over Mate, especially when you throw in the age difference. And the hope for Chalowski is if he moves fast, is he'll be a 22-year-old big leaguer. For Mate, if he moves at a glacial pace at this point, he'll be a 20-year-old big leaguer, and not a crazy thought to think that he'll be a 19-year-old big leaguer, considering he's in Double A right now and hitting, and the Brewers, we would expect to be in it. Yeah, again, he's on at nothing else. He is on exactly right now the Jackson Chourio pace. He is on exactly that as far as the age he was at the level he was. Chourio, they sent to Triple A at the end of that year when he was 19, and then he went to the big leagues that basically opening day the next year. I think that opening day next year kind of feels like that's not a aggressive timetable now if Modesta is healthy. That's just a logical one if he keeps performing. And that's going to get him there. He's going to be a big leaguer. He's going to have 2 years under his belt, you know, by the time Chalowski you know, and any of these college draftees can reach the majors, doesn't guarantee anything, but it does make for a fascinating thing. But Josh, you also talked about that there are other players. While Made may be our clear number one right now, but who are some of the guys who could kind of factor into that discussion as we go through the rest of the year? You mentioned Chalowski. That's one.
I wasn't even thinking about him.
Yeah.
But the one who will be number two once Griffin graduates is Leo DeVries, who's also super young, 19 years old. I mean, he's an old man by comparison to Made. But he skipped the DSL, as is common in the Padres system, and then got dealt to the A's, obviously, in the Mason Miller deal, in a deal I don't think either team regrets right now. But he's been outstanding in the Texas League. Granted, it's a more hitter-friendly league, but he's 19 years old, one of, if not the youngest player in it, and is killing. I think he might be it's between him and Ethan Zales in that league for youngest guy, but he can play up the middle. He can hit for power. He's performing. Like, if Jesus Made doesn't exist, this is I think it's a pretty easy call for number one overall once, you know, Griffin died.
By the way, just to answer that, DeVries is significantly younger Zales. They're both 19, but Zales is
about. That's right. Duh. One signed after the other.
Zales is about to turn. He'll turn 20 June 1st, whereas DeVries will play the entire season as a 19-year-old and turn 20 in October. So we are talking about a situation where, yeah, this is a teenager who, again, I would say the conservative expectation is he'll be a big leaguer. Again, if he stays healthy, he'll be a big leaguer as a 20-year-old because he will play the entire next season as a 20-year-old. If you're already in Double-A to start this year and you're performing, which he is performing so far, that's kind of puts you on that track. Now, he's the logical kind of next comparison point. And we're talking about two teenage shortstops in Double-A. That's the kind of profile that you talk about as, okay, you could be number one. Ian, is anyone else, or is that like, you and I had a discussion where you were talking about that there are tiers as you kind of, and we talk about this too. That's what the BA grades are hopefully kind of laying out in some ways. Tier wise, like, are they is Made at a tier to you at a different level than anyone else? Or, and if so, like, how many people are in the next tier, or is there a tier with Made and other players in it, do you think?
I think to me, it's Made is in a tier, then DeVries is in a tier. And I agree with Josh. There's a little bit of a drop off. And then, you know, the next group we have is all guys in AAA, you know, close to the big leagues. But I just think all of them, for various reasons, they just don't have that same maybe upside potential. They're, you know, a little older. There's, you know, Walker Jenkins has some issues with the injury concerns. Colt Emerson is the contact has been a little more inconsistent this year than we've seen from him in past years. And I think, you know, a little older too. And when you factor all that in, I think it's those two alone. And then it's kind of, there's a little bit of a drop off. It's not a huge drop off. I think that we're kind of seeing a similar split to what we saw at the beginning of the season where, you know, you had Connor Griffin was in his own tier, but it was just slightly above Kevin McGonigal. Then after that, there was another slight tier. And then you get into like JJ Weatherholt and the other guys who were there. And I think right now that's kind of what we're seeing too with Jesus Made is in his tier, but it's a very small gap above Leo DeVries. Cause I mean, you look at those two, very similar production, very similar age, underlying data is basically identical. Like there's just a lot of similarities with them. And then there's a slight tier. And then you get down to the other AAA guys, you know, the Colt Emersons, the Walker Jenkins types who all have their various issues, but they still, you know, extremely talented players.
Very talented players, but like, okay, I think I could kind of just do a quick run through on this. Like Colt Emerson I know he's a high level higher, but less production, more kind of like concerns, I would say, about the contact and all that than these teenagers who are just one level behind him. Jenkins, unfortunately injured again right now. But that, you know, a freak injury, hit the wall, separated, you know, injured his shoulder. But I would say, as much as we love Walker Jenkins, like Walker Jenkins' best stretch at pro ball is kind of the normal Jesus Made month. Like that's like Walker Jenkins was slugging under 400 in the very offensive AAA International League at the time of his injury. Max Clark, I would say, like, is a very good player, but I would not say that it would be hard to say that when it comes to like skills and tools, that his are as good, if not better, especially when you talk about that these are shortstops. That's where I do feel, I agree with you. I think that there is this kind of tier where it's going to be, it may be a little boring for a while, to be honest, because if Made keeps it up, we just may have a number one till he graduates, which, hey, we love having top prospects at the top of the list. We're not going to complain about that in any way, shape, or form. But speaking of that, as you go down the list further on, there were some players where we had some really interesting discussions in what I was thinking was a 3-hour meeting that we had to kind of work through this. We'll get into that right after this quick break.
Let's talk love life, FT family. I know it's an important part of everyone's life, but if you need help or if you don't, Blue Chew Gold is changing the game and it is turbocharging your love life.
That was beautifully delivered. The new arousal boosting formula combines passion and performance into one tablet that dissolves under your tongue for super fast onset. No more waiting for a pill to kick in. No more moments ruined by performance anxiety. Just the results you want when you want them. Most ED meds only focus on blood flow, but Blue Chew Gold goes further by combining two ingredients for blood flow with two more for mental arousal and connection. So you're not just physically ready, you're actually in the mood. And we've got a special deal for our listeners. Right now, when you buy 2 months of Blue Chew Gold, you get the third for free with promo code FOUL. That's promo code F-O-U-L. Visit BlueChew.com for more details and important safety information. And we thank Blue Chew for sponsoring the podcast.
So when we were talking this through and figuring out who moves up, who moves down, who kind of stays where they are, who's graduating as we work through this, but the White Sox, Caleb Bonnemer, who's been one of, I would say, the breakout prospects so far last year, and then he's shown big power so far this year, although batting average and contact strikeout rate has not been as impressive. He ended up being, I would say, a divisive prospect, not in a bad way, but in a, we had a very good discussion about him. Josh, I'll kind of start with you, kind of like, not that you're like, oh, he shouldn't rank in the top 100 or anything like that, but you kind of raised some of the questions of, hey, maybe we shouldn't be going overboard on this player yet. Talked to a lot of scouts about it. You've seen him in person this year yourself. What is it that kind of gives you a little bit of pause when it comes to pushing Bonnemer up too much?
Well, I will just push back just one. His batting average is fine. He's hitting .289. But yeah. The thing that gives me pause is I think there's a lot of red flags going forward. Like, he is very strong, can hit the ball a very long way. But there's a lot of warts in the rest of his game. Like, his spin is an issue for him. It's not surprising. There's a lot of guys for whom spin is an issue at that age and a lot of other ages. He can nail a fastball. I will give him that. Defensively, there are questions about whether he can stay on the left side. I mean, I don't think anybody expects him to stick at shortstop. It's kind of iffy at third base. I had one scout yesterday suggest first base. He doesn't run particularly well. He's not a clogger either, but he's not even close to, he's not average or above average, maybe close to it underway. It's just, that's a lot of tool dings right there. That's a tool ding in pretty much every area except power. And I know he's doing what he's doing, but there's a lot of areas to work on before he gets to that ceiling. And I think he's, the same scout yesterday maybe gave him a 45 grade, kind of up, down, fringe average big leaguer. I guess more fringe average big leaguer. So scouting the stat line might not tell the whole picture in the case of Caleb Bonnemer. And I don't want to totally kill him. Like, I just say that maybe it's a little rosier on the stat line than it is in person.
So Ian, what about you? You know, kind of give the case for Caleb Bonnemer, I guess, in some ways. I think you were one of the people who kind of was laying out, like, maybe pushing him up a little bit.
Yeah, and I think, debates like this is healthy because it shows a good mm-hmm. process where, when you talk to scouts about the same player, you're going to get different viewpoints as well. So, it's one of those things. And I think the case for Bonnemer is he's a 20-year-old in high A. He is extremely patient. He hits the ball extremely hard. It's like above average exit velocities for someone his age. It's really good. Like, the approach is solid. There is some swing and miss. That's, there's no disagreeing with there. It's strikeout rate's almost 30% right there. Has some trouble catching up on pitches in the zone. So that's a little elevated right now. But 20 years old, you know, 20 year old with the power that he has, and the knack for finding barrels are hard to find. And I think that the defense is kind of the swing here. If he can stick at third base even, then, you know, if he's a power over hit guy, we've seen that type of profile have a ton of success at the major league level. Where I could see, you know, Josh's side is if he ends up having to move to first base or somewhere like left field, there's just way more pressure on the bat. And that's where, you know, the contact ability, the warts there become more of an issue. But yeah, I think just when you look at his age, he's a 20-year-old, he's got extremely, extremely impressive power, and he's producing right now. And, you know, there's something to say about that. You know, he's getting to pitches right now. He's hitting them out of the ballpark. You know, there's a lot to like still, even if there are some long-term questions about his hit tool and his defensive ability.
At second in the minors in home runs as we record this with 11 behind Kevin Alcantara in AAA, who had played a longer season. Kevin Alcantara has 12. The other thing, I'll just
another power over hit player.
Yeah, and I'll also note, you know, that as Josh mentioned, like, and he's doing it. Not that there aren't some hitters parks in, but I would say that, you know, the South Atlantic League is not the Carolina League, but it's also not. Generally, it has not been the most offensive league out there. It's not.
Depends on what part of the league.
This season,
it depends where you play, man. Like, there are some pretty easy hitters parks in that league.
And then there's Brooklyn, which I know he doesn't go to Brooklyn much.
Yeah.
But yes. Yeah, so that's another thing I think it is worth us kind of mentioning here. It's funny because we do, like, Josh and Ian both did a really good job of getting feedback for this. We talked to, you know, we try to blend everything that we have, all the reporting we have, into putting this together. But one thing that is also true about this, we are in May now. May and June of this top 100 is the thinnest the top 100 gets all year, because the players that we just talked about at the top of this, we had the top three that we loved who are having great year, you know, that we feel great about what they're doing so far, like the Kevin McGonigals and the JJ Weather and many others beyond that who've also graduated. They're gone. They're out of here. And they're not yet. We're not going to see yet the draftees. They're not here yet. So we can't say that Rock Chalowski has entered this and Grady Emerson and all the players in the draft. So we have this combo pack of, you're seeing players. All that can happen right now is players graduate, because we're not getting a new influx of players other than prospects taking steps forward. And so I would say, like, if you compare where this is right now, the 75 through 100, to where it was before the season, it should be weaker. So, you know, Josh, you had something you want to say on that.
Yeah. And I was going to say, like, we're going to graduate, like, with the list you're going to see on Wednesday, or are seeing right now, depending on when you listen to this, you're going to lose Peyton Tolley very shortly. You're going to lose Chase DeLauder very shortly. I think you lose Carson Benj almost immediately. Noah Schultz shouldn't be long. There's a lot of guys on this list who will be gone fairly soon, and it's going to get even thinner. Bryce Eldridge just got called back up. So there's some guys that are, like, we're right on the razor's edge of graduating anyway. And with the new way we do it at BA, where it's 45 active days service time, guys graduate even quicker. Like, Connor Griffin might graduate sooner than he would in, maybe a little bit sooner than he would have in the old format. Trey Savage is going to be graduate much quicker than he would in the old format. So it's kind of going to be a little bit of throwing darts at the back for a while.
But speaking of that, we have a number of players who joined this, and we're going to cover some more of those in a minute. But I would say that a guy that, if you've been paying attention, if you've been reading Baseball America over the last month, if you've been listening to the podcast or watching us on YouTube, Ian, I don't think that you're going to be surprised to see that national shortstop Ronnie Cruz is now on the top 100. He didn't leap onto the top 100. This is not a case where, to go back to, remember when Josh saw Jackson Churio in Zebulon, and we went from, you know, he was off the 100 to he was in the top 50 in a blink of an eye. Ronnie Cruz is at the very back of the 100. However, he has joined the 100 from where I would say was being significantly off of the 100 in the offseason. What has kind of led to this rise?
Yeah, I mean, you got to give a ton of credit to the national staff that was able to get him at the deadline last year for Mike Sirota. I'm sure that's one the Cubs, looking back, regret. Because Cruz has just taken a major step forward this year. We first started getting kind of whispers, the backfields. I know Jeff saw him down with the Nationals during on the backfields and was impressed. And he got off to a great start in low A. He's now moved up to high A as a 19-year-old, and he's hitting even better there. Right now in high A, he's hitting .354 with a .436 on base and a .604 slug. He's got 18 steals on the year. He's got 6 home runs. And it's just, it's the power speed combination is just what really stands out with Cruz. The tools are extremely loud. There are definitely concerns, which is why he's on the bottom of the list, namely the contact. You know, there's a propensity for chase there. The approach is still developing, but he's got power. He's got speed. He's a super athlete, and he's producing already. And I think when you look at the combination of his age and his production and the present tools, there's a lot to like there. And then you kind of project things out, and the approach is going to be the swing here. There's a ton of variance in his profile, but you know, if he can figure it out approach wise, you know, get a little more patient, improve the swing decisions, and which is something that obviously the Nationals know they're working on that. If you can take a step forward in that area, this is the starter package for someone who's going to end up a lot higher on the list. But I think this is a safe spot to put him in for now, because we still need to see that translate on field. And so far, you know, there's a lot that needs to be done with that area.
I'd just like to point out here that, you know, we scouts were on him before this year. Mm-hmm. He appeared in one of the backfield standouts entering last season. He appeared on the ACL guys to watch. Entering last year, so this wasn't a complete unknown, but he was certainly
He was a top 10 prospect, top 20 prospect in the system. It wasn't like he went on the 30 or anything.
Right. Yeah. I'm trying to plug the scouts here, yeah, who are very good at their jobs, yes, and helped us very, very much.
Very much. So we're going to then cover, there are new additions. There are also players who aren't on the 100 yet, but who could come onto it. And we had a lot of fun discussions about that, and we're going to get into that right after one more break. So we have the new top 100 up at baseballamerica.com. Do check it out. Thank you to the Baseball America subscribers for allowing us to do what we do. We hope you enjoy that. We also updated the draft rankings to 400 for this year's draft. We just updated the senior sign list to 50 seniors who really could play a part in this year's draft, and also have 2027, 2028 draft list up as well. So much over at baseballamerica.com. But we want to wrap today's prospect podcast by talking about some of the prospects who intrigued us, who either moved up, moved on, or are on the cusp of moving on to the top 100. Josh, who stood out to you?
Ethan Salas. We talked about him a couple of years ago, and it's been kind of a holding pattern. Like, he was moved super aggressively and then missed almost the entirety of last season with a back injury. He was supposed to be in the fall league. It was a back injury. He was supposed to be in the fall league and wasn't. So I think his season last year was like 3 games at most. And now he's back at double A at the ripe old age of 20 and is mashing. And I'm so happy to see it, because he looked so good 2 years ago, and I would hate to have seen him be one of those guys who just never could get on the field and had his career muted by, you know, injuries less instead of performance. You know, when we talked about him when he was an 18-year-old, a 17-year-old, it was, this guy could be the total package. I remember seeing him hit balls off of guys like Ian Clarkin. Like, I know he's not, you know, Hall of Famer or anything, but the guy was like 7 or 8 years his senior and stinging the ball. You heard tell of him tripling off George Kirby on the backfields. He was catching in big league games. And then all of a sudden, he moved so quickly, and then his back kind of gave out, which is scary for anybody, but a catcher, it's super scary. Now he's back at double A and mashing and catching and stealing and walking and doing all sorts of fun things, and he's jumped. I think he's the biggest riser in the list.
Definitely took a big jump forward. I think we were talking about in the meeting yesterday that as we did this, it's like there's a difference between a guy jumping up who hasn't been there before versus a guy who has. Like in Salas's case, he's been very high on this list before, and then it was really like, just need to see him be healthy and perform. And it's been a stretch since we've seen him be healthy and perform. It's great to see him be healthy and perform. Ian, going to you, who stood out to you?
I think for me, the most intriguing one is Anthony Ianson, who was the highest debutant, I believe, in the top 100. He was not on the list. Yep, he was not on the list, and now he's inside the top 50, and he's going to be the top pitching prospect in the Red Sox system when Peyton Tolley graduates in a few days. And, I mean, he looks all the part of that. He's obviously someone we've talked about a lot this season because he had that amazing performance in the spring breakout game when he hit 100 miles per hour for the first time in his career. And since then, he's done nothing but impress. He didn't walk a batter until, I think, the fifth start of his career. You know, he's missing a ton of bats. He's got four pitches. It's a really polished arsenal. And he just showed, you know, he was far too good for high A, and he's already been promoted to double A. And, you know, that's going to be a good test for him because he was obviously clearly too advanced for the high A bats. Strikeout rate was over almost 50% in high A. It was a 47.9%. And the way he gets there is, I think, what really is impressive with him. You know, he's not holding that same velocity he did in spring training, but he's more like, you know, 94 to 97 right now. But he's just got three really good secondary pitches, and he can miss bats with all of them, and he can locate all of them. And, you know, it's the type of polished arsenal that you see work in the big leagues this year. It's a starter's build. He's got athleticism, throw strikes. Like, there's just a lot to like with him. And, yeah, I mean, he's well on his way to establishing himself as one of the top right-handed pitching prospects in baseball.
Prospect I'm going to talk about is one that joined the very back of the top 100. And if you look at his stats, you may say, well, why isn't he going up higher? Because Caden Bodine, who was considered one of the top catching prospects in the 2025 draft class, had a great career at Coastal Carolina, great contact skills, great defender, a little bit of question about the impact. That was kind of the big question. But Bodine so far is hitting 383, 439, 617, four homers, 11 walks, and in 23 games, in 109 plate appearances, four strikeouts. So that is a sub 4% strikeout rate. That's exceptional. And you may go, well, wait, he's in the 90s on this list? But he is in low A. He's at low A Charleston, which is kind of the surprising part of this when you lay out just everything I did. Luke Stevenson, who is considered the other kind of like top catching, college catching prospect in the class, is in high A. That's kind of the level you would expect for a player of this pedigree in their first pro season. But there's a reason for this. The Rays have not sent Bodine to high A because Nathan Flewelling, who also is a breakout prospect, one who had a great year last year and is in low A at Charleston and now is doing it at high A at Bowling Green, he's in high A. So they didn't want to just say, okay, we're going to do this a 50-50 job split in high A. So they want them both to get more time than that behind the plate. So they sent Bodine to low A. We'll have to see, like, I would say that there's not much that Bodine can do in low A that's going to be more impressive to us than what he's done, but we would love to see him do it against a more skill-appropriate level, whether that's him going up to high A at some point, but I don't think Flewellen's going to go up to double A anytime soon. Maybe it's just skipping Bodine at some point to double A, because I don't think that that would be crazy for him considering the level, especially considering the catching ability. But Caden Bodine, absolutely one to watch, especially, again, we knew he had great contact skills. I will say, I don't care what level you're at, a sub 4% strikeout rate. To have as many homers, four homers and four strikeouts, if your homers is equal to your strikeouts, you're probably having a great year. That is the Baseball America Prospect Podcast for this week. A fun one this week. We always love having a new top 100 up. And by the way, if you have thoughts, if you have comments, feel free to leave those on our YouTube channel. That helps other people find the content as well. We appreciate that. I will try to respond to as many as I can. I will say, if you just say, where is so-and-so ranked, I'll probably direct you to baseballamerica.com. But if you have questions about why a player moved up, why he didn't move down, where a player is, you know, things like that, I do try to respond to those. I am in the comments regularly, and we appreciate hearing from you. That is the podcast for Ian, for Josh. I'm JJ. So long, everybody.